Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking. A mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Hacker Factory. I'm your host, Philip Wiley. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I teach and mentor aspiring pen testers. And this show is an extension of those efforts, which are my passion. Each week, I have someone on the show that tell us about their journey into pen testing, as well as making any recommendations on becoming a pen tester. And today, I'm happy and honored to have my friend Juno on the show. Juno, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, Phil. What about you?
Doing good. Excited to have you on the show.
I'm really excited to be here. It's so cool that you're doing this.
Good to virtually see you. You know, not getting to see my friends during the pandemic's been tough. So it's kind of good to be able to see people virtually.
Oh, I know. I'd say the virtual like Fire Talks online and DC214, of course, is what sort of kept me going through all this.
Yeah, I agree. If it wasn't for different virtual meetups and virtual conferences last year, I don't know what I would have done. But ready for things to be back in person.
Oh, absolutely. I cannot wait for Dallas Hackers Association. I'm like counting down the days, even though I don't actually have a day to count down to. Counting up the days.
Definitely. We can only have one in-person meetup. That would be the one I'd want, even though we both host meetups ourselves.
Yeah.
That one's fun. And it's a lot more fun when you don't have to run it either, because that's the, you know, one of the problems when you run a meetup. You know, you've got to set things up and do all this. So it's really hard to talk to people and that sort of thing. So.
Oh, I know. I think I've learned so much more like administrative stuff than I ever thought I would just from being the official cat herder of DC214.
And the good thing about that is those skills kind of transfer over when you're running meetings and stuff too.
Yeah.
So, excuse me. A lot of our listeners may not know you, but could you tell us a little bit about your background?
Hi, I'm Juno. Juno, a hacker from Alaska. But I'm sorry, I had to do that. I'd be remiss if I didn't. I'm Juno. I moved to Dallas from Alaska in 2018. And when I first moved here, my entire social life, actually it still is, was when one of my coworkers introduced me to Dallas Hackers Association. And through that, I started giving presentations, most notably the one on the applications of game theory and behavioral economics to cybersecurity. It's probably the most notable because I give out beer in some of the presentations. And outside of that, I work as a pen tester for Critical Start here in Dallas, doing consultant pen testing. And in my free time, I breathe fire and play a bunch of musical instruments.
Yeah, you work with a pretty cool team. That's I'm glad you got in somewhere like that. That's a good place to learn, and I'm sure you get a lot of cool projects.
Yeah, I've been there probably about 6-7 months now, and it's just been so cool. I definitely learn like 100 new things every day. You should see the notebooks that I have just full of stuff. And as you said, it's such a cool team.
Oh, that's cool. So when you keep, as far as keeping notes, do you keep hard copy notes or actual virtual notes?
So I cannot figure out how to like type and pay attention at the same time. So I still handwrite all of my notes, but then I type them down A, for memory, and B, because notebooks get destroyed or lost pretty often, especially if you're me. But that's sort of been my routine since high school. Oh, I'm also a grad student. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And that's one thing, I'm glad you're sharing that, because the diversity of educational backgrounds on the show is pretty interesting, because you have some people that are really good hackers that have no formal education and maybe not even certifications. And then we have people that have degrees and you're going to graduate school. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's super cool to see all the different people who come into InfoSec.
So as far as like your educational background, so you have a 4-year degree. So what was your bachelor's degree in?
My bachelor's degree was in computer science and economics. It was from a little school in Portland, actually. It was actually one thing I really, really liked about going to a tiny school was my friends and I essentially pioneered their cybersecurity program because we were the only ones who were interested one day in just like a basic networks class. The professor said, "Hey, somebody do this CTF for extra credit." And my friends and I signed up. The CTF was the National Cyber League's NCL CTF.
Oh, cool.
Which we had a lot of fun. And from there, we kind of rolled up to the department. We're like, okay, give us more cybersecurity classes. We want to know more. And actually, like 3, I guess it's been, 3 years since I graduated, they finally pioneered a cybersecurity minor, in part due to the demands of like, not demands, due to the just such an interest that grew from back when I was there, which is super, super cool.
That is cool. That's very cool to have influenced that. Yeah, I'm a big fan of National Cyber League because, you know, it's kind of interesting that people, you know, are considered for jobs sometimes because people look at the rankings and stuff. So, you know, mentioning CTFs through some of the other shows too as a way to get experience. So that's really cool. And that's cool that you're working on your graduate degree. And also too, that the computer science background, that's kind of the way I think to go. If someone's getting a degree to get into cybersecurity, especially if you're wanting to be a pen tester, you know, that computer science background is going to make it a lot better education for you if you're ever writing any kind of exploit code or that sort of thing.
Yeah, I found that having a background in coding has really helped. One of the cool in part because I can read source code and it even helps to read like code disassembly through code disassembly through tools. And what's also cool is, as you mentioned, that I can turn around and do a little bit of development. I've actually started my first development project where my team and I are forking Responder and creating and maintaining our own version. And I get to do some development work for the first time since college, which should be cool.
That's great to hear because I know that they were talking about no longer supporting Responder. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. I know a few sponsors and such have also taken on the other one,
That's okay.
I know that a few sponsors and such have taken on the original as well. So it'll be really cool to see how that develops. But it'll also be really cool to mess with our own.
Yeah, because I know some of the people at your office are Go fans, so it'd be interesting to see a Go version.
That keeps coming up. Oh boy, does that keep coming up. I guess I need to learn Go.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. And, you know, kind of from some of the people on your team that kind of influenced me. I was playing around with learning Go a while back. But, you know, you see a lot more tools popping up in Go. So
that's
pretty interesting. So as far, you mentioned, so what type of courses have you taken to learn pen testing? Are there any type of certification courses or anything that helped you along the way, self-study or
how? So I'm still currently cert free. I'd say, right after I first moved here, I took your web application pen testing course, which was a really cool introduction to pen testing, as well as kind of a reminder that that's what I wanted to be doing. Because at the time I was working working in cybersecurity, but not necessarily in as technical of a role as I would have liked. So that was a super cool course to open my eyes and sort of. Sorry, I need to stop rambling and trailing off. I know this is a podcast.
Oh, you're okay. That's fine. It's just.
But yeah, that was a really cool course to get down the basics of web app pen testing, which now I'm using pretty much every single day, as well as a reminder of that's what I wanted to be doing.
Well, that's great. So that's really.
In addition to that, currently I'm I'm going for my graduate degree through the NYU's cyber fellowship program. But other than that, I haven't taken a lot of security related courses yet. But I am excited to at some point start trying to get my OSCP.
That's good. Yeah, no, NYU, I'm kind of a fan of NYU because I've seen some of their stuff, because I remember a while back, several years ago, they used to post a lot of their curriculum, you know, based on the courses they were teaching, and they had some offensive security related stuff. And I can't escape me, one of the professors that was there that's an author and pretty well known in the industry. Not sure if he's still there or not, but I was pretty impressed with the content that they were putting out.
Oh, that's awesome. One of the things I really like is they actually have a professor who works on game theory and cyber defense. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And I'm still at the very beginning. I'm still taking a prerequisite algorithms and discrete math course. So I'll probably have a lot more to say in like a year or so. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely looking forward to it.
That's good. So you're pretty well involved in the community. And one of the times that you spoke that was most impressed, it was at B-Sides Austin, whenever their projector wasn't working and you went to the whiteboard to give your presentation. Could you kind of describe that experience for our listeners?
That has hands down been my favorite talk that I've ever done. And what's interesting is, and you can attest to that, you and anybody who's there can attest to this, I was freaking out before that talk. It was my first ever talk, and I was on the main stage of B-Sides Austin, and I was absolutely terrified. If somebody had told me that the projector wasn't going to work, I just would not have driven to Austin. I got up there to give my talk. The projector wasn't coming on. The time was counting down, and there was a whiteboard behind me, so I kind of just decided to wing it. And it's one of those things that I think just the adrenaline kind of took over and made that work. But it was an incredibly cool experience because it ended up being a really interactive presentation. It ended up being a really, really cool interactive presentation. And I definitely felt like a college professor. I actually sent some photos of that to my college game theory professor, just to show him, hey, I'm still using what I learned. I walked out of that presentation just sort of in shock, but like in a good way, because I was so surprised that I'd managed to pull that off. But it also really inspired me for how I wanted to give presentations and stuff in the future, keep that really heavily interactive elements. And honestly, I hope I get the chance to do a whiteboard presentation again, although maybe a little bit more prepared next time, or prepared for that aspect.
Yeah, speaking of the interactive part, that's one of the things my current employer, INE, really loves. And they even provide us with a Wacom tablet to annotate slides and stuff. So that's a good experience.
That's so cool.
But going back to that experience you had, that just kind of shows the true spirit of a hacker. You make things work. You know, hacker originally came out of people that were coding or making things work, you know, or making things do things that they shouldn't do, reverse engineering and figuring things out. So that is, you know, making things work. That's the true spirit of a hacker, you know. So at least you pull that off, and under the pressure, that's good. You know, a lot of people under that kind of pressure would have crushed them. I don't know what I would have done. I mean, I would have had a hard time presenting if I couldn't, you know, if I didn't have my computer and slides available. So,
yeah, I was surprised that I was able to pull that off. But I think, yeah, that is one thing that drew me to pen testing and tech in general is I've always been good at figuring my way through weird problems. And I love weird problems, weird puzzles. And I didn't have a ton of a technical background in my youth, like a lot of other computer people, but I spent my childhood out in the woods building terrible, terrible structures, falling out of trees. And I think just, excuse me, due to that, I learned to adapt a lot, a lot. And I think that sort of really that sort of, yeah, it really applies to what I'm doing now, sort of creating something out of nothing and looking around, okay, what do I have and how can I use it?
Yeah, that's good.
One thing that comes to mind from my childhood, that I used to do acrobatics. And one time we got to the studio and it was locked. So we made a human tower and sent one of the smallest flyers through the window, which is 100% something I would love to do on a physical pen test. So if you're hiring former acrobats, or not hiring, I feel like a physical pen test by acrobats would be really cool. And I don't know how many acrobatic skills I still have these days, but.
Well, maybe Cirque du Soleil will have like a pen test or a hacker themed show someday.
So funny story. When I left college, I essentially applied to two jobs. Well, I had a job lined up out of college, and then I sent in a application to Cirque du Soleil for fire dance. I was rejected. Sorry.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. But you know, sometimes when you get rejected for certain things, then you really get to do what you're truly meant to do.
It certainly wasn't something I thought I was going to get. They happened to be looking for female fire knife dancers of exactly my height. And I'm like, this is oddly specific enough. I had none of the rest of the skills, but that didn't stop me from applying. And that's actually that doesn't stop me from applying to jobs in cybersecurity too. I don't think I've yet applied for a job that I was qualified for.
You know, that's the best way, that what we hold ourselves back when we think we're not qualified enough. That's like my first pen test job. I really didn't have everything I needed to do the job. You know, I'd had some vulnerability scanning experience and security and sysadmin experience, but not really what was needed, but I applied because I wanted to do it. So that's a good lesson there for people who want to do something, just go for it.
Yeah. My first pen test was a little web, a smaller web application. But it was in Vietnamese. So, which I still can't speak Vietnamese, but I now know what, how to write like unauthorized in Vietnamese now, but, that threw me for a loop. But was a really cool experience. Definitely on my first pen test though, I think every single day I texted one of my friends who was a pen tester, and I'm like, oh my God, this is so hard. I'm just like mentally drained. How do people do this every day? And you know, now 7 months later, I'm just having an absolute blast.
That's good. That's great.
Although I was having a blast back then too. It was just, you know, it's really cool to look back and see how much I've learned. Like some of the things that would take me 5 hours of trial and error, I'm like, oh wait, I remember how to do this now. It takes me 30 minutes. And it's always just nice to see that. Yeah. I'm still definitely a beginner, but it's really nice to see progress.
That's good. And you're in a good place to learn too. So that's always good when you've got good team members to learn from. You know, some people get into environments to where sometimes they end up knowing the most. You take some of these smaller companies, and I really think working for a consulting company is really a good way to get started in pen testing. You can learn so much more, so much quicker.
I've seen so much cool stuff. Yeah, I've gotten to see so many different types of network setups and types of systems. And it's just been really, really cool.
So are you enjoying getting to do any of the network pen testing? Do you enjoy that?
Yeah, I'm slowly getting to do more and more of that, and it's just fun. You know, it's definitely different than what like CTFs and Hack the Box prepared me for. They especially didn't prepare me for finding nothing, which always scares me. But yeah, I've gotten to start work on to work on both internal and external network pen tests. Those are obviously the tests with the hugest learning curve. And every single time I do one, I learn so much more. Sorry, I need to come up with something to say other than it's just really cool over and over and over, because that is how I feel. But
yeah, that is cool. It's really fun when you get started. And it's one of those things that stayed fun for me for a long time, you know, because it's getting to see the different environments, learning different things as new technologies.
Yeah, and they're all so different.
Yeah. And, you know, with the way technology evolves, it's just going to keep, like, you know, pretty consistently, you're going to have new technologies to pen test against.
Yeah. That's one thing I love about this job is it's just constant learning. But yeah, it's been cool to see, like, I did my first network pen test and then a few months of web app pen test and then came back to, a very similar network pen test. And it was really cool to be like, wait, I know how to do some of the, or I know how to do more of this now. And those are just really cool.
The good thing is too, with the web background on networks, sometimes, you know, networks can be fairly secure. And so understanding web applications and web servers, sometimes your only way to hack into anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oops. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Cause I've had some fun pen tests where they're running like a Apache Tomcat or Red Hat JBoss Java servers and have unrestricted uploads or be able to easily guess credentials. They're using default credentials. You can do some fun stuff with that.
Yeah. I've seen some really interesting things on companies' internal websites. I think often, you know, they're working on securing their external facing website, but their internally facing employee websites are interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes people just assume because it's internal, it's safe and don't think about insider threats, because I forgot what the stat was, but recently saw that IBM said like 60% of the breaches are internal. So that's something for companies to keep in mind. Because, you know, you have disgruntled employees, and then you even have like people that could be hired by a nation state to come, or even some other competing company to go in and get intellectual property. I was talking to a company like last year, they had some information on, some stats on intellectual property theft. And they were talking about a hardware manufacturer that someone from a Chinese company was sent in to work for them. So they applied, got a job and stole, you know, company secrets.
Wow. That's insane.
So it's amazing what goes on out there, but you know, internally, you know, people sometimes don't secure things the way they should. So since you're really big on the community, did that really play much of a role in you getting your job?
I think it definitely helped that. Well, one, I saw the job listing on Twitter. And two, I know a couple of people on the team just from DHA and DC214. So I think that certainly helped me when I went into the interview and I'm like, wait, I know some of these people. Awesome. It was also funny. One of the guys on the team messaged me. He's like, you know, I was about to send you this job listing and suggest you apply for it, but then I noticed that you'd already applied. So I think it definitely helped to know people and for them to know, you know, a little bit more about me and, are definitely helpful that they knew a little bit more about me and they already knew that I was very, very into hacking. That probably helped.
Yeah, that's good. Cause one of the recommendations I give is for people to network, because, you know, if you know someone there, it's a lot easier to get your resume in front of the hiring manager and people already know something about your background opposed to someone they don't know anything about. I mean, cause it can be so tough, you know, when you're starting out and even not starting out. It was interesting because when I went to work for US Bank, I'd applied at Bank of America and I had all the skills that were needed. I applied online with the normal route of seeing the opening, applied online. I didn't know anyone to get a recommendation through. So I applied, nothing. And then after I went to work for US Bank, like several months later, they started pinging me about a job. The recruiters did. And so I had all but just trying to go through that. And that goes to show people you need to network, because I had a lot of experience at the time, my OSCP, SANS GWAPT certs, CISSP. Oh. And I had all the certifications and everything that was required and experience. But because I went through uploading my resume through their system, whatever they do, algorithm or keyword search they did, I didn't have enough of it and they get selected. So, you know, that goes to show if you know people in the company, it makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, that's, networking has been incredibly helpful for me. I sort of fell into the networking portion by accident, because when I first moved here, I was like, whoa, cool, a group of people that hangs out. And so I just made it my goal to make friends with everybody. And then, yeah, that's definitely helped in my, both in my professional career and just in like public speaking at cons. It's whether I'm interviewing for a job or speaking at a conference, it's really nice to look and see, you know, see friends and people I already know. I've also found that, so because I'm relatively new to the industry, I don't know who any of the big names are. I don't know who is who. Mm-hmm. And I will walk right up to anybody and say, hi, I'm Juno. And I've had some incredible conversations with incredible people who I had no idea they were famous. I had no idea they were popular. They'd made the tools I'd used until after the conversation. And that actually apparently has made me very endearing to people. Endearing makes me sound like a dog or a puppy. And apparently people like that because, I don't seem to care who's who, when in reality, I just don't know.
Yeah, that's good, because a lot of those people I know don't want to be treated any different, or they really don't want to people just to talk to them because they are who they are. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Jokes on them. I'm awkward and weird around everybody. Although I did, I met HD Moore at that, Austin Hackers Association, that first B-Sides that I went to.
Oh, cool.
And I was just having a conversation with a guy who was standing next to me. And then I think it was Jason Haddix, another person I didn't realize was a big name at the time, because he was the guy I was hanging out with at the conference. He's like, you know, that's HD Moore, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know who you were. And, you know, he laughed. He's like, no, that's fine. So then at that point, I probably did make it weird.
Yeah. Speaking of conference speaking, has that, you feel like that's helped you professionally?
Absolutely. I think, in terms of sort of the soft skills of being able to speak in meetings, of being able to speak in and lead meetings, as well as for interviewing and stuff as well, it certainly helps that people kind of know who I am. Yeah. You're the game theory girl. It's also, I think, really helped my confidence in imposter syndrome, which is something people are beginning to talk about more and more, which is awesome. Because every time I give a talk at a conference, or especially Dallas Hackers Association, you know, it's met with genuine interest, and I'm always so excited by that. But I think that's definitely been, I think, yes, conference speaking was actually my best way into cybersecurity industry. Because when I gave my first talk at DHA, now, one thing I love about DHA is you can get up and give a talk on anything and people are going to be kind to you. I mean, obviously within reason. Like if I had gotten up and given a very, very beginner friendly or beginning, like, here's how I did like the first three or the first five over the wire things, people would have been genuinely interested and nice. But I wanted to come in with something people hadn't heard before, but I wasn't an expert hacker yet. So I picked a topic I had a little bit of knowledge in that I didn't think people had known too much about, and that was game theory and behavioral economics. And I think coming in with a topic that nobody had really, or I don't want to say nobody had heard of before, but a topic that hadn't come up a lot really helped me to sort of find my niche and prove myself, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it kind of works as a proving ground, which helps a lot professionally, because people know you have some experience, and people know you have genuine interest to go out and do research on your own, and that it's research worthy of some amount of interest, I guess.
Yeah, and the cool thing about that too is you kind of started building your own brand, because people knew you as the game theory person. So, you know, as people find out more things about you, it's easier for them to remember. Once yeah. people know that you did fire breathing, it's kind of hard to forget.
What's the phrase? Assume she is technical and capable of breathing fire. Well, I literally am.
So yeah, we can't get away from that. So could you describe your fire breathing skills, how that came about, why you learned that, and where you use those skills?
So when I got to undergrad for orientation, they had a couple little activities planned, and one of them was a performance by the fire dance club on campus. And I saw them, like, holy crap, I want to do that. So I showed up to the first practice. I'm like, how, take me, how do I become one of you? And I ended up, obviously joining, and then being a major part of that club for the next 4 years. I took over leadership junior and senior year, which I actually learned so much. So all of my businessy soft skills actually come from that experience, because I had to do all this fire safety training. I had to fill out all these fun documents for the Portland Fire Department. I think I'm still on their fire watch list, which, yes, I'm very proud of. So it was a college club actually ran by one of my computer science professors, who still is a really good friend of mine, and we play D&D sometimes. we did fire juggling, like baton twirling, and then, coolest of all, traditional Polynesian fire knife, which I have one. Oh man, it's not right behind me. I'd have to go find it. Sorry, this is completely getting off topic, but I have a really cool fire knife by a Polynesian company that does them down in Hawaii. But yeah, it was an incredibly cool skill to pick up. And I like to say that I basically majored in fire. And yeah, I planned all of our performances. I choreographed them all. I even added in acrobatics. And it was one of the coolest things that I think I've been a part of. And while I definitely don't do it, I don't spin and breathe fire, or I don't play with fire to that extent as much anymore. I definitely still do, usually in my friends' yards. Usually I get their permission. but it's been a cool hobby. I still could use any excuse to post that photo of me fire breathing.
That's pretty cool. That's got to be the most interesting college club I ever heard of, because you wouldn't think of a college allowing you to do something like that. But that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we had to. I feel like we both had and did not have extensive sort of safety measures in place, because as a club, the essentially, college age leaders were pretty much in charge of making sure everybody knew all the safety, everybody had all the requisite safety training and stuff. Other than our faculty sponsor who did come to all the meetings and perform in all of our shows and was incredibly awesome, we didn't have a lot of adult oversight, which is probably how we got away with a lot of stuff. I actually, one of my teeth is fake, because in one of our practices, my friend and I were doing a battle with flaming machetes, which are literal machetes dull, thank God, with that we put wick on, and lit on fire, and I had a fire staff, and in one of our practices, he hit me across the face with a flaming machete, which was really, really fun to explain to the dentist. She's like, oh no, how did this happen? Because I had to go in for like emergency tooth reconstruction. I don't know. She's like, oh, how'd this happen? I said, oh, I was hit in the face with a machete. And she's like, oh, do I need to call the police for you? And of course, I'm dumb. And I'll go, oh no, my friend did it. And she's like, oh. And I'm like, oh, no, you don't, you no, it's fine. It was on fire. She's like, what? And
yeah, I bet that blew the dentist's mind, I'm sure.
I told my parents I fell down the stairs. So mom and dad, if you're listening to this. They didn't believe me, though.
Yeah, definitely one of the wildest stories on the podcast so far. So yeah, we're getting pretty close to the end of the show. Could you kind of share some of your advice for people that are wanting to get into pen testing?
I think the biggest, I just gave a talk on this. This should be right at the forefront of my mind. I think, so the biggest advice that everybody gives you, and I know it's cliche, is ask questions, but take that to heart and then ask even more. I would be absolutely nowhere without my mentors and all the wonderful people on my team who have answered all of my questions, from really hard questions to things that I should have known. Maybe there are dumb questions, but ask them anyways. I think another thing that really helped with me was to try and let go of ego and stay in the beginner's mindset, I think is what they call it. And I actually have a post-it note on my monitor that says, remember, you know nothing. And that sounds really, really negative, but hear me out. And that's because, so I have, my whole life have been one of those annoying know-it-all type people. And every time someone tells me that, I just have that urge to go, oh yeah, I know. And even if I don't know. And so just sort of to remember that it's better, way better to learn something twice than it is to pretend to know something that you don't actually know. Letting go of ego and staying the mindset of I am always a beginner, I am always learning. Maybe I should put that on my post-it to make it more positive. Yeah. And then in terms of technical things, right now I'm trying to work my way through a lot of the Hack the Box challenges, which are awesome. For web application testing, I definitely recommend Burp actually really, or PortSwigger rather, released has a free online lab, which has been really, really cool. But one thing that I need to do, especially now that I'm working as a pen tester, is sort of make sure those stay fun, because I want, you know, for me, Hack the Box is where I get to try all the stupid stuff that I would never be allowed to try on a real pen test, especially in production. And so I think as you're learning, trying to keep it fun is really, really important. Because I found when I first started to do Hack the Box, I would get really frustrated and give up quickly. And that's because I was viewing it as, oh, I have to, you know, go study this, go learn this, go get this done. Whereas now I sit there and try everything that my little heart wants to. it probably takes me twice as long to get the get the boxes, but I'm getting them more frequently, and I'm just, yeah, you have to make it fun and not take it so seriously, I guess. That's been really important for me for just continuing to learn. I also think there are a ton of one thing that's worth noting is there are a ton of different learning styles. For me, I do learn really well in a traditional classroom, and that's why I am going for a grad degree, but that's vastly different for everyone. So if one thing doesn't work for you, try something else. There's certainly no right way to get into security or pen testing.
Yeah, it's different from everyone. I like the tip on keeping it fun, keeping interesting. because, you know, it takes a lot to learn this stuff and it's easy to get burnout. So you have to be careful not to overdo it. So making it fun, I really like that.
Yeah. One thing that I've done, and yeah, I'm trying to do the same thing even for my grad school homework, which is way harder to make fun sometimes. Looking at you, discrete math. but trying to make it fun and trying to really for that, I'm trying to look at it as, wow, I get to learn this cool stuff. This is a choice that I made to go learn these things. As well as often I'll be like, okay, I'm going to do homework or work on a Hack the Box challenge for 20 minutes. And if I'm miserable after 20 minutes, and sometimes I say 5 minutes, depending on my mood. If I'm miserable after that amount of time, I can stop. And giving yourself, you know, the freedom to stop if you're not feeling it. Because I've found if I say I'm going to do this thing for 5 minutes, I'll probably spend 2 hours doing it. But having the freedom to stop means that, yeah, makes me more motivated to start in the first place, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. It's definitely a unique way of looking at that. I think that's great advice. As always, thought you're wise beyond your years.
I've kind of decided that every day I'm going to wake up and make the world just a slightly weirder place. And I think that's where a lot of that comes from.
Yeah. That's good. Just putting your mark on the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're down towards the end of our show. Thanks for joining us. That was a really awesome story. Some things that I learned that I didn't know about you that was pretty cool. So
yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.